Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Rabona Podcast. I'm joined again by Michael De Silva and Ryan Hun, and the theme of this week's podcast is transition, that is to say, teams and players who are making big steps, either up or down the pecking order. Michael, Ryan, welcome again.
Hey.
Hi, Musa.
Great to see you again. Let's get straight into it. So we're a few games now into the domestic schedule, both in England and Europe, the wider context, and some interesting strides being made by certain teams. Watford, in particular, 4 straight wins.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about teams in transition. Watford, 4 wins on the bounce. It's impressive. They look great. I mean, they look like the complete... They look like what Burnley were last year.
With more of a goal threat. Yeah. That's what I like about it. They're expansive. And I love that they've won 4 games playing, you know, fairly open style. I'm really impressed by the recruitment of Pereira from, I think, River Plate, who is a terrific footballer. And just, they look like a side that can expose your weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, they've got goals, which is, you know, scored 9 already.
Right.
Only conceded 3.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could be, Vicarage Road could be a real fortress for them this year. It's a difficult, we're in this era of big arena stadiums. You know, Vicarage Road is one of the old school grounds and can be tricky for some of the big teams to go there and feel comfortable straight away. And Watford made Spurs feel uncomfortable from the start. And I felt when Spurs took the lead, it was somewhat undeserved. And Watford just hung in there. They went a goal down, but they were just so, like, courageous. But it's more than that. They've got quality.
Right, right. Well, that's something. They kind of seem to expose the pressure points. And I think I mentioned this to you before, but you look at how Watford were being eviscerated by Man City last season. And if Man City went to Watford, like, you know, tomorrow, you'd expect... You wouldn't be surprised to see a draw in that game, would you? You wouldn't be surprised to see a 1-1 draw.
No, I mean, I think they yesterday they made Spurs look very shaky.
Yeah.
And it was quite unusual, actually, I think, to see Spurs like that. Usually they go to teams like that. Maybe my memory isn't serving me correctly, but they seem to just kind of ease through those games with an element of control a lot of the time, maybe more so than, you know, someone like Arsenal would, or, you know, even at times Manchester United. And I think that yesterday they looked under pressure from the start, and it was quite odd to see Spurs like that, actually.
I think a lot of teams are figuring out against Spurs, if you keep the ball against them and make them chase, that's when they're at their least comfortable. Spurs like to dominate. They always like to have more of the ball. And Watford didn't let them play. So, it was impressive. It was great. And it wasn't great for me, but it was great to see them do so well. And I think they're going to be a match for anyone, really, this season.
Can I just also throw something about Spurs? Is there a sense maybe that some of their players' powers are slightly diminishing as they get a bit old? Like, I'm thinking of maybe like Dembele, for example, in midfield. Is there a sense that there's maybe some performance levels are, just with regard to wear and tear, maybe dropping off a little? I don't know.
I think central midfield is a bit of a problem area. Dembele is really kind of, he's a fantastic player, but he's kind of is waning a little
There's
bit.
There's a lot of mileage on that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
You know, he's given Spurs a lot of service, you know. Mm. I think he's been there 7 years now. You know, there's been some great performances by him over the years. And I would say even the first leg against Juventus last season in the Champions League,
yeah.
He was absolutely outstanding then. But you're right that, yeah, that time could be catching up with him. And there is a lucrative offer from Beijing Guoan.
Really?
Pending. Yeah, and he's apparently mulling that over. That's could happen in January.
What about Dier as well? Dier's form doesn't seem to be...
Yeah, Dier seems to be a bit out of favour at the moment. I think his limitations have kind of been exposed a little bit. He's never been the paciest. Defensively, he grew up as a defender and that's his strength, but he doesn't really offer that, what a real driving midfielder from the centre, like Pogba, for example. He gives you everything.
Like Dembele used to be.
You know. You could say that, yeah. So I think Dier is a good player to have, but I think Spurs really need to go out and buy a box-to-box all-action midfielder, really.
Well, if we can leap across London for a moment, because another sort of box-to-box player, of course, is N'Golo Kanté and was an impetus behind Chelsea's fantastic victory. And they are a team who look really resurgent under Sarri. You know, Pedro is looking terrific. His movement's great. Hazard has just really taken up where he left off at the World Cup.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
It's just been seamless.
So impressed with how Chelsea can just fire their manager, bring in a new guy, and everything just works. Mm. And it happens season after season. Well, maybe two seasons.
I mean, it's been interesting this season how seamlessly they've switched to a back four with a fairly... new-ish partnership with Luiz and Rudiger as the two. Mm. And they look really solid. Mm. They look very good in midfield. Kante and Jorginho working together really well. I think Jorginho's...
Fabregas.
He's just a really lovely player to watch.
He is. What does this mean for Fabregas?
I honestly don't know.
Beginning of the end, maybe?
He has been injured. He's been out. I mean, he was captaining Chelsea in pre-season. Mm. He is part of the setup. It's just really a... It's more of an injury thing at this point.
Yeah.
Long term, it can tell, because if you look what Fabregas offers you as a passer, I mean, come on. I find it difficult to believe that he will not play a significant role at some point in this season.
Yeah.
Because really, even Jorginho, nobody has an eye for a pass like Fabregas in that Chelsea squad. True.
And also, he's into his 30s now. And even though that's not old relatively, I think for someone who's been playing top flight football regularly since they were 16
and football of that intensity
and hasn't missed huge periods with injury, he's been pretty consistent throughout his entire career, and you see how sometimes that can catch up with players.
Actually, can we just let's have a moment of respect for Fabregas, because this guy is durable, has turned up for the big games and the small games in equal measure.
Yeah.
And in an era where Arsenal midfielders were having the hell kicked out of them, has stood tall. I remember it was a game against Stoke, one of the games away, after sort of one of the couple of bad tackles that got put on big Arsenal players at the time. And Fabregas went away from home and absolutely took them to church.
That was the game that Ramsey got injured, I think.
Was it that one?
Navy blue.
And he was just out of this world. I remember thinking, these people are trying to put all manner of like combine harvesters on him, and he just was having none of it.
Yeah, the thing about Fabregas, which is really great, is that he was obviously supremely technical. And at that time where Arsenal had a bit of a rep for being easily bullied, he had some real bite to him. And, you know, he was captaining a very young team, and he was still very young at the time. And he had like a real streak where he was just like, no, this isn't going to happen. And unfortunately, at that time, the Arsenal team that was around him wasn't good enough to kind of sustain major challenges.
I think there may be a slight stamina issue with Fabregas, because a lot of people talk about him tailing off after the new year. Mm. And I don't think it's because he's a choker, because if he was a choker, then he wouldn't be so good at major tournaments at the business end. I think it may be more a fatigue thing. I don't know. But this rotation he might experience in Chelsea might really help him. And they'll be dangerous actually come the end of the season.
Well, Fabregas seems like a nice stepping stone to talking about Arsenal. Last weekend, I mean, 3-2 against Cardiff. Cardiff, I think, I mentioned to them because I think they actually played their best game of the season despite losing. They seemed finally to be getting to grips with the Premier League a little bit, but Arsenal were too strong, and Lacazette and Aubameyang, I mean, I'd like to see more of those two together, actually.
Yeah, it's the first time they've started together this season.
Mm.
And they look really good. I think Aubameyang works really well on that left-hand side.
Lacazette more of a fixed point.
And Lacazette just offers you so much as a number nine. He brings other players into play a lot of the time, like Giroud used to, but he's obviously a little bit sharper. I think he's probably a better finisher.
Well, I mean, that winning goal.
You know, I mean, it's...
What a finish.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't really have much room.
Shades of Alan Shearer against Switzerland in Euro 96.
Yeah, very much. Well, Batistuta against, sorry to bring this up again, was it against Arsenal, the Fiorentina one at Wembley?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh my, that was brutal. I mean, look, it's Batistuta. That's not... Yeah. No one is responsible for that.
I want to give it, like, real props to Cardiff, though, because they did make it very difficult for Arsenal. I'm not entirely sure whether all the credit lies with them for that or whether it's maybe Arsenal's inability to just look solid at
the moment. Well, I think whenever I've watched Cardiff this season, they've just been toothless and they actually attacked that game.
Yeah, and scored their first two goals
of the
season.
Don't they always have a go at you, Cardiff? Cardiff always give you a good game, don't they?
Most sides do.
But the way that you match up, with Cardiff in particular, I think the last 3-4 years, you face them in some quite big matches, and they've always, because they like to play football, and Arsenal let you play football.
Yeah.
They don't suffocate you. Arsenal have got a very style where, as people like Arsenal watching them, because they allow for open play, and Cardiff seem to respond quite well to that.
I think the same way with Spurs and Watford, though. I think that actually going to places like Cardiff can be difficult if you're especially if you're a top 6-8 side. Those grounds are a real asset, and the crowd are really lively.
And we
touched on it a few weeks ago with West Ham this season, how they've lost a huge part of that moving to the London Stadium.
Mm.
I mean, I'm not sure it's the core thing, but you're seeing how different they seem to be now when you go to their ground.
I wanted to ask you about Mesut Ozil, because he's had a tumultuous summer and start of the season as well. Rumours of a rift with the coach already, but he was played on the right this time.
Mm.
And how did you think he got on?
He was quiet in the first half. Second half, he got into the game a lot more, was responsible for the pass to Lacazette, who laid it off for Aubameyang's goal, which was the second goal. And that's what he brought a lot in the second half. He was breaking the lines a lot with passes, something we've seen him do a lot. And
because I think if Mesut Ozil can adjust to being on the right-hand side, and that means Arsenal get the best out of Lacazette and Aubameyang, then you could really have something.
And Bellerin overlaps so well. It's actually quite a nice little placement to tuck in like this.
Yeah,
I think, he's moved positions quite a lot in his career. I mean, he played a lot of the World Cup for Germany 2014 from the left.
Mm-hmm.
He played a lot from the right for Madrid, and he has that ability to drift in.
Yeah.
And I think that when you have players like Aubameyang and Ozil on the pitch and Ramsey, they all like to roam a little bit.
Yeah. And Mkhitaryan too.
Mkhitaryan too. And I think that one thing he did a lot in the second half was Ozil was dropped in a little bit deeper. Ramsey drifted. He gets into those little pockets that not a lot of other players can get into.
Attacking-wise, Arsenal could be really exciting this year.
Yeah, I mean, attacking isn't really a problem. I think it's going to take a long time for Emery to get the defensive side sorted. I think Torreira could be a real key part of that. He came on again and had a huge impact when he came on.
How long do you think it's going to be before we see Leno in goal for Arsenal?
I'm not too sure, if I'm being honest. It wouldn't surprise me if he was back in for something like a Carabao Cup game or a Europa League game and then started in the Premier League. I think it's going to take a game like that for Cech to be quote unquote rested.
Yeah.
And then see.
For someone like Cech, what he's achieved in his career, you know, his capabilities, even if they might be on the downward slide, I think he deserves the respect to at least prove himself. Even when Hugo Lloris came in at Spurs, Brad Friedel was still the number one, and he had to.
I mean,
win his place.
It's funny with Cech and Joe Hart, because they're both in an era of skill sets needing to be upgraded.
Mm.
So Joe Hart was very much a victim of not being able to play out from the back. Petr Cech is also suffering from that to an extent, and it's funny because you look at someone like Alisson, Liverpool, who made a mistake which was punished, but you know Liverpool still won, and they looked resilient in doing so. But the transition between the kind of ball-playing goalkeeper and the goalkeeper that just basically commands his box and makes saves, it's not just good enough to be, you know, great at handling the ball, to be supreme at commanding the ball when you come for a corner.
Mm.
And I feel sorry for Cech, actually, because I feel sorry that he couldn't see out the end of his career, or the kind of, you know, the latter part of his career, without being under threat in that fashion. It's always a shame to see great keepers going out like that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about that was that it invites so much pressure, and it invited pressure from, I think, the first 10 seconds. The ball went back to Cech, and it was a little bit chaotic, not too confident, and that set the tone for a lot of that first half. He gave the ball away after about 10 minutes straight to Harry Arter on the edge of the box, who should have done better and
he
scored.
He seemed nervy, didn't he?
He does, I think, because I think he's getting a lot more of the ball than he has
stressful
done in his career.
Can I throw this in as well? Because I want to give a quick shout out to David Priest, a fantastic writer, former goalkeeper, of course, professional goalkeeper. And David Priest was analysing Alisson's mistake against Leicester and made a very good point. He said, look, Joe Gomez wasn't showing for Alisson when Alisson was trying to play the ball out. And not only are goalkeepers expected to play the ball out from the back, but also I think defenders having to adjust for that. They're having to adjust for showing for a goalkeeper the same way they would show for a midfielder or a defender. And I want to get on Liverpool. I don't want to just be critical because there's so much to say that's good about what they're doing. They've won four straight, first four of the season. They've looked in cruise control, actually, for some of those games. Mohamed Salah has scored a couple of times, hasn't actually been at his best. And they're kind of in second to third gear, and they're looking very impressive. And I want to give a special sort of shout out to Sadio Mane, who I think is still a little bit underrated. Because here is a guy that basically, of that front three, he's probably the least heralded, but always delivers.
There's very good reason to think that he could be the Mo Salah this season. Now teams are going to be looking to shut down Salah as quickly as possible. It might give Mane a few more openings.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Mane is someone who, was terrific in the Champions League final after losing. They lost Salah and he took the fight to Madrid. And this year, his movement, his speed, his touch, his vision is just extraordinary. And, Liverpool have made the transition better than Man City have. Man City, I think, are actually struggling really badly from the absence of Kevin De Bruyne.
Absolutely.
That's a big loss for them.
Yeah.
Bigger than maybe most people outside Manchester anticipated. I think Guardiola saw this coming. And then they've also got, the sort of the indifferent start to the season of Leroy Sané to contend with.
You could really start to see the miss of De Bruyne when City are faced with those, really big games, those crunch games. I think they've got more than enough to get through most tests in the Premier League, but he could be that extra 5%.
It's his passing that opens up teams. You look at City and the games they've won, they dominated from the flanks against Huddersfield. They won the 6-1.
Yeah.
But if you look at look at Wolves and their most recent victory, Newcastle, these are limited teams that really push them to the extreme. And it's because they don't have that passing guile to open up teams to the middle.
The flip side is that we're probably going to see more of Bernardo Silva,
right,
who I think he can unlock defences, but it's a very different skill set.
Yeah, De Bruyne is very much like the glue, I think.
Yeah.
And he kind of can facilitate a lot of different traits in that team that just make them click a lot better than when he's not there.
Like
Eriksen at Spurs, for example, I think that you take Eriksen out, it's not just the attacking side so much. It's a lot of other things that people don't really see that are a little bit more intangible.
Well, Eriksen and De Bruyne are two players who you can absolutely rely upon to be as effective at the beginning and the end of a move. You cannot say that necessarily of Bernardo Silva at the moment. And even David Silva to an extent. David Silva can score goals, but, De Bruyne is a legitimate goal threat.
Yes.
At all times, as is Eriksen. And that, I think, is the major difference.
He's become an inspirational figure in that team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maybe we should shout out Wolves again.
Yep. Absolutely.
Beat West Ham.
Yeah.
West Ham in big trouble. Four straight defeats.
Brutal.
What do you think? Do you think they're going to give Pellegrini time, or do you think
they have to?
Yeah.
Yeah, they absolutely have to.
That squad is not good.
But they've spent so much money. They spent 100 million this season, I think.
Yeah. Their midfield is a big problem. There's no pace in there. Wilshere, with the greatest will in the world, is
not quick.
Quick, and he's not the player that we thought he might be.
Rather than the actual Wilshere. We're big fans of Wilshere's abilities, but wear and tear catches up with you. This is something beyond his control. And I looked at that squad of players and I just thought to myself, oof, West Ham have got... It's all a bit substandard.
It does sometimes take a while for a manager to implement his ideas. And I think Pellegrini's got a very different way of seeing the game to David Moyes, and it might take some time for the players to adjust. And I'm sure that West Ham will pick up, but even if they do pick up, I think there's some fundamental flaws there in that team.
Yeah. But be fair to them, Arnautovic had a very good effort saved by Rui Patricio, who made an extraordinary save.
Great save.
You know, if that goes in, that's 3 points at home.
True, but West Ham's best player this season has been their goalkeeper, Fabianski.
Yeah.
And that says everything, really.
Yeah, that's never a good sign.
Yeah, they're a bit, I mean, similar to Everton in a way, like you were saying before about how it's going to take time. And I think that's a massive shift in culture from someone like Sam Allardyce to oh my God, the guy's name, Silva.
Yep, Silva.
Blank. And, you know, same with Moyes and Pellegrini. Yeah. And, you know, Everton looked really good and then they've looked not so great. And did you say a bit catfishy?
Well, yeah, you got me in trouble now. Yeah, I said before the podcast, it's just with Everton, it's like, it's just making sure you've got attacking diversity. They had a slight problem with Lukaku where things went through him quite a lot. They had, you know, great supply for him. Obviously, De La Feu to a certain extent was great at that point. But my concern with them is just have the variety of goal scorers.
Mm.
So, you know, have maybe three players that can score for you regularly. A bit like Spurs had when Son really came to his own.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's all I'm really concerned with about them. I mean, they look good. They look fresh. They're doing quite exciting things. You know, they're getting in charge in a game. They're getting ahead in games, not necessarily closing games out, but there's potential there at Everton, I think.
Yeah. Well, another team that have managed to turn that corner, unlike West Ham, is Southampton. They finally got a win. Danny Ings scored. I think that's nice.
Yeah, Palace as well. That's a good win.
Yeah, I really like Danny Ings. Mm. I'm really glad that he's, you know, seems to be fit.
Yeah.
At a club that I think he fits pretty well.
Exactly. He's got the right club now.
Yeah, I think he's one of those. There was a big string of players who moved to Liverpool, and it's no disrespect to Liverpool or the player, but it just wasn't the right fit. And there was a good few years where a lot of players did that. And
you're talking about Ricky Lambert.
Well, Ricky Lambert's a bit different because he had such a strange career. He's a Liverpool fan, and when you get to that stage of your career and Liverpool come in, you're going to go. But
But what Lambert suffered from, it was more they felt they needed a target man. So each time when Liverpool signed a player from Southampton, and this is credit to Southampton, each of those players was somebody who would offer something new. So Lallana offered, you know, creativity and pressing hard the pitch. Ings is someone, you know, he's gone to Southampton now and he's, you know, from Burnley, and he's a player who's technical, who fits so well into their ethos.
Yeah.
And Southampton kind of always, they've always produced that kind of player that offers something new to your squad. And I don't think at the time that any of those players were bought by Liverpool, Liverpool's defence, they were the wrong player for Liverpool.
Mm.
They weren't wrong. It was just there was problem behind the scenes with ownership, with management, and these just were players that didn't get a fair run at the first team. So
big shout for Højbjerg's goal as well, because it was
nice finish.
It really looked like when you see old footage of old Cup Winners' Cup games from like the '70s. Guy charging forward, his socks around his ankles.
It was a bit Kenny Dalglish against Bruges. It was a bit like that. It was like really good. Yeah. It belonged in sepia, didn't it?
You're maybe right. Quickly before we go for a break, United back in business. In a beautiful pink kit.
Come on, back in business. I mean, we've never been out of business. Look, we've got 35 sponsorship corporate partners. Biggest revenue. You know, you talk about, forget your net spend league tables, talk about GDP. We've got the biggest GDP of any major footballing nation. No.
Moose has got smoke blowing out of his ears.
Oh, goodness.
Did you see Lukaku's
interview?
Oh, you mean
interview? We're a football team, sorry.
Did you see Lukaku's interview after the game where he said... actually, Mourinho, he's a really nice guy on the training ground. He's completely different. And when the interviewer, I think it was on Match of the Day, put that to him, at first his face went really defensive, like, they're coming for me again. And then she went, no, in a good way. And he really softened. And he was like, you know, people who know me, they think I'm a nice guy. You lot don't really know me.
Mourinho is a very strange...
That's funny.
But I'll say this before the break. Mourinho is such a strange character because he is misanthropic. And at the same time, really likes to be liked. It's really, really an extraordinary quality. And, you know, about United very quickly, we won't dwell on them too long. We talked a lot at length recently. Lukaku scored twice, which is great because I think he had a bad start to the season. I think he'd admit that. But looking across at Burnley, this is a team in trouble. I wonder if they've been, you know, partly overextended by the European excursion. But I also think there's an element of... It's exhausting to play that way with that level of defensive intensity an entire season.
With a very limited squad as well, and for a good couple of years as well.
They've had a summer off and they've come back and people have studied them and people have hit them really, really, really hard.
Mm.
And they're finding it very difficult to find a plan B because they're also trying to play more expansive football. They've scored more goals, but they've been opened up more easily. And I think they're going to have a very, very hard year.
And they've already played 10 games this season using 17 players, which...
It's a good thing they're out of Europe, to be honest.
Definitely.
They need to get back to what made them so difficult to beat last year.
So we're back from our break and we're going to leap into European news. What's going on the continent? Michael.
Well, Bayern are top of the Bundesliga.
Wow, unbelievable.
Wow, transition there. Right. Shock horror.
Stop the season now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's...
Any more cliffhangers for us?
It's all a bit predictable.
But there's some changes there, aren't there, at Bayern? It's not all as it seems.
Yeah, James Rodriguez was absolutely crucial to Bayern last year. I'd say for the second half of last season, he was the best player in the Bundesliga, and it was really, you know, he was the linchpin of that team and we were getting back to seeing his very best. Sadly, we haven't really seen him much this year. Kovac doesn't seem to fancy him and he has to make do with 15 minutes off the bench.
And Thomas Müller's back in favour.
Thomas Müller's playing all right. He's linking up well with Lewandowski, who was the star man when they beat Stuttgart 3-0.
Goretzka scored as well.
Goretzka scored a really nice goal. That was very well taken. Just one touch to make the space and he just guided it into the bottom corner. It was a beautiful finish. So indication there that he's going to fill the void left by Vidal.
I like that Bayern midfield this season. Like Thiago and Goretzka. I like that pairing.
I would like it more if Hamas was in there. I'm a big Hamas fan. I think he's a class.
Well, I mean, it's the deeper two. I think that... I mean, do you think he... I mean, Ribery and Robin aren't going to play all season, are they? Do you think he's going to come in?
Well, Koeman's got an injury for the whole season, or for many months, I think.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah. But Gnabry's there, so he'll play. But yeah, they could... I mean, I think we might see more of Ribery and Robin than we were all expecting.
I think Bayern might get cold. They're going to get caught cold in the Champions League again because of the lack of competition, or will Borussia Dortmund push them hard again this year?
Well, at the moment, you've got some surprise teams up there that are pushing them. Wolfsburg and Hertha Berlin are the only other two teams with maximum points. Schalke are without any points whatsoever. Well, yeah, without even a point. They've lost both their games. And Leipzig were held at home to Fortuna Dusseldorf, having lost their first game. So they're right down there as well. So it's, to be honest, bad news for the Bundesliga because you need Schalke and Leipzig and those teams making it interesting at the top.
Especially after Schalke last season, you know, I kind of thought they might start pretty strongly.
Absolutely.
Tedesco's done a really good job.
Yeah, he has, but it's been... And they're in the Champions League this year. They've got a game against Porto coming up. Big game to start with. But the signs are not good for them at the moment.
Duda got two in that game, right? Good free kick. Do you see
great free kick? That. Yeah.
Can I be segue guy again?
Oh.
Talking of interesting at the top, looking at Spain, only because I want to talk about Atletico Madrid and the fact they're not really at the top. They're struggling so far.
Well, they're not at the top at all. They're 10th.
What was it? What played three?
Played three, 1-1, draw one, lost one.
Right, and they lost to Celta, I think.
Yes.
The weekend, 2-0. The devil work of Iago Aspas, who finds space where no one else can.
The demon, as you like to say.
Well, he is an absolute demon in the best possible sense. I think a terrific player.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Well, they looked very, very not Atleti-like. They kind of lost their heads a little bit, not in a good way. You know, when Atletico go crazy and it's like, yeah, come on. It was a little bit like...
Godin fell over.
Yeah, Godin slipped for the first. Second goal was a good one from Aspas again. And then, there was a red card towards the end and that kind of finished them off.
Mm.
Formation seems like there's like a 3-5-2 they were playing, was it, at one point?
They weren't very solid. They were a little bit all over the place. And not very impressive.
Is he trying something new?
Well, I wonder how... I mean, we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago after the Super Cup when we were saying that they've added genuine flair this season and how if you use their you know, very robust defensive capabilities and add that flair to it, they'd be a really impressive side. Maybe it's just not clicked yet. I mean, it's only two or three games into the...
I was excited to see Lamar sign for them.
Yeah, me too. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think it's...
Come on, surely we need to write them off. It's the age of the knee jerk. Surely they're doomed.
Yeah, but look across Europe, right? You've got Barca and Real at the top of the Spanish league, Bayern already top in
Watford.
Germany. But even in the Dutch league, you've got PSV, Ajax and Feyenoord, top three.
Yeah.
And we're barely into September.
Cristiano Ronaldo scoring freely. No, sorry.
Juve are top.
I know, but actually,
maybe this is for another podcast, but I do worry a little bit I worry a lot for the future of European football because it's being dominated by the same clutch of clubs.
I think Betis are going to win the league this season
after a
wonderful Seville derby yesterday, which was really fun.
1-0, right?
1-0. It was Betis' first home win in the derby for 12 years.
The evergreen Joaquin, the Gandalf of Spanish.
It was amazing.
Football.
So Joaquin came on as a substitute and scored 2 minutes later.
How old is he now?
37.
Oh.
Yeah. But he's one of those players that no one in Spain really says a bad word about, really. He seems to just be a really popular...
Like Cazorla, isn't he? Santi Cazorla, he's kind of loved.
Behave. No one's that beloved as Santi.
Sorry, spot the Arsenal.
And the great thing about Joaquin is he's one of the few, or one of the rapidly decreasing number of players who's older than me. so it's always nice to see that.
Yeah, he also, that amazing pizza place, for people, a little bit of local knowledge, Pomodorino, Strassmannstrasse in Berlin. There's a guy who works in there who looks like Joaquin, even down to the blonde.
You should take
blonde tips.
Taking a photo and show.
But he's Italian. But also in Spain.
Can we just?
Oh, actually, no. In that game, we need to talk about the red card, which was absolutely amazing. So Roque Meza had a yellow already, and Pau Lopez is running out to try and throw the ball, and basically elbow drops him, and Meza gets a second yellow. Pau Lopez gets nothing.
It's bizarre.
So the guy that was attacked.
Yeah, basically full on. Full on off the ropes. But it was a really big win for Betis. The place went crazy. Yeah.
It sounds like a derby worth visiting actually at some point. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I kind of gave it a shout out last week and it is always a really fun derby.
Can I just, because we always take Leo Messi masterclasses for granted. But he put one up against Huesca. And what I love about that, you know, they beat Huesca 8-2 after Huesca took the lead, actually, after about 3 minutes.
Yeah. Huesca's first defeat of the season.
Terrific game of football. And Huesca really gave it something, which I love. They played so openly, which a lot of clubs don't have the bravery to do at the Nou Camp. And I think it actually bodes very well for their season. If they continue playing with that kind of bravery, they'll stay up.
Their first goal was 19 passes and it was the most by a team in a La Liga game against Barcelona at the Nou Camp since 2005-2006.
And can I say this? Can I give...
Just considering they've just come up.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, I want to give Ernesto Valverde some credit because he gets a lot of criticism for not rotating his players enough. And what I love about what he did in that game was he paid Huesca the full compliment of putting up a team, a high intensity, great lineup to go through the paces, and he gave them the full force of Barcelona. And actually, there's no greater compliment than that. I love that. I love when managers do that more often.
And also, Eibar beat Sociedad 2-1.
Oh, that's a tough game, Sociedad Eibar.
They're always really fun, those games. I really want to go to one of the Basque derbies. Maybe Bilbao Eibar would be
fun.
There's
the cuisine too. It could be a weekend break.
Maybe a Rabona road trip. Yeah.
Well, let's make it happen.
Let's see if the powers that be can subsidise it.
Sponsors. Any sponsors out there want to...
let's look at Serie A very quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Which one do you want to touch on first? Samp Napoli?
You know what's funny? So Quagliarella scores this unbelievable goal.
It was unbelievable.
I look at this, it's flying sort of Roberto Mancini style, flying back heel. And, you know, which is, it's such a Sampdoria thing, isn't it? Flying back, because they love that at that club. but it's funny, because I saw that goal, I thought, he's been doing that his entire career.
Well, yeah, he was asked after the game where it ranks in his best goals he scored. He said, maybe top three.
I'm surprised it's that high. I'm surprised that man has scored every kind of goal.
Yeah, it was
apart
good.
From the tap-in.
Milan beat Roma 2-1 on Friday.
Big win. Really big win, though.
It was a massive win. And 95th minute winner for Milan. After...
From a Spurs legend.
No, the Roma equaliser was by a Spurs Hall of Famer, Federico Fazio.
Fazio.
You got the winner first.
Cutrone. Higuain assist. Higuain did something amazing that game as well. Did you see this?
I missed this game.
All of a sudden he popped up as like the deep-lying midfielder, held onto the ball way too long, gave it away and went absolutely mental at everyone. As if to be like, this is your fault.
Wow.
I was like, what are you doing there, Gonzalo?
Goodness me.
And then you've got Kevin Prince-Boateng Sassuolo.
Fresh off his new single release.
Yeah.
He can rap. He can rap.
Yeah, he can. What's his rap name again? Was it Prince with like the dollar signs?
Yes, like two S's, like two dollar signs for the P-R-I-N. And then if you're looking on Spotify, I think two dollar signs for the S's.
Yeah, yeah. Berlin representing. Shout out to Vedding.
Thank you. Yeah, respect.
They beat Genoa 5-3. And they're second in the table, just behind Juventus.
I really like watching Sassuolo, though. I don't want to sound like a mega football hipster, but they're...
Play a nice style.
They're just fun.
They've had that since they came up, though.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like a Chievo type vibe.
Yeah, for
sure. They really go for it. Yeah, yeah. Can I just say also, I mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo before, and I just want to say that, like, it's interesting because he's, you know, hasn't scored, but it's only been three games. And he's obviously having plenty of attempts on goal. And at some point, that attack will click around him. I just think it's interesting because you look at Madrid now, and they've been a bit liberated, Bale and Benzema, in his absence. And I really think that the nice thing about him being in Italy and the sort of Messi Ronaldo dichotomy being lost is everyone can just get on with their football.
Yeah.
You know? And I think he still will be a great signing for them. I think he's going to come into his own later in the season.
There's always an element of, and I, you know, it's not necessarily his fault, kind of is, but a bit of a circus around Ronaldo.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a very different league as well to La Liga, you know, and it's going to take him time to settle there. There was a stat going around. I think he's had more shots without scoring a goal than anyone else in the major European leagues.
But wasn't he slow to start for Real Madrid last year as well, and then ended up with in the league this?
Yeah, he was quite poor actually early on. Yeah. I think
Champions League he scored quite consistently, but league he didn't get going for a while.
Someone who's not having a problem. Someone who's not having a problem with goals is Jovinho for Parma. Scored.
His career in Italy has just been a real delight.
Yeah.
I love it when players go. They leave a club, it doesn't quite work out, and they go somewhere new and they just find their feet. I'm really happy for him, actually.
I'm really glad Palmer are back as well. Really, really glad. Palmer. That's classic era.
I had a Carter shirt.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the number 10. I love that. Yeah, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. So, last week saw two interesting developments. First of which was England women's qualification for next year's World Cup.
Yeah, with a game to spare as well. They play Kazakhstan on, I think it's tomorrow, actually, Tuesday. But they're already through. They beat Wales 3-0. And Wales have played all their games. So, yeah, I think England are 2 points clear.
Look forward to seeing them in France.
I'm really excited about the World Cup. Last one was great. Glad they're there.
And hope they'll get a good following, given that it's, you know, so close to the UK, maybe get people travelling over.
Yeah, and it was on BBC Two, I think, on Friday night, which is...
And Iloluco is now a pundit officially for them. It's BBC now, so that's great. So some more coverage coming there, I think, on both sides of the...
USA is still the team to beat next year, though, right?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah, I think so.
Good times. We'll be looking out for that. And it's great to have a women's team for Manchester United as well now, which is exciting.
Yeah. Nice. With a top, top coach.
Hey, listen, I'm really, really excited we've moved with the times at last.
Yeah.
That's really, really positive. The second piece of big news is the Champions League draw.
Mm.
UEFA Champions League is almost upon us again. Yeah, really exciting. I want to leap straight to Group C. There's always a group of death. Group C, Red Star Belgrade, Liverpool, Napoli, and PSG.
Liverpool, PSG. That I just think goals. goals.
I mean, really, almost all of those games are goals.
Napoli too, yeah. I mean, really, it's really, really exciting. I think that is the closest we've got to a group of death this year. Spurs Barcelona could also be quite interesting. And I'm looking forward to seeing Ronaldo going back to Manchester.
I want to say, like, Spurs Barcelona, in terms of, it's really exciting because it's an opportunity to see how Pochettino's developed with a squad that's essentially unchanged. But also Barcelona making adjustments. Dembele's looking really good so far this season.
Yeah.
Coutinho will have a full season where he's eligible for Europe. Kind of a slightly new look Barca, but also Leo Messi, just a supreme playmaker again.
I think that group might be more interesting than people.
Well, Inter Milan and PSV as well. PSV.
Not easy touches. Yeah. No. Not soft touches at all.
PSV flying high in the Dutch league. Could be tricky for Spurs there.
Atleti, Dortmund, Bruges, Monaco.
Yeah, Atletico, Dortmund, I think, could be really nice.
Nice to have Monaco in that group as well, actually.
True. Monaco, well, I mean, Monaco versus Dortmund, of course, that's going to be an emotional emotional game. Mm. I was there last year for the game that was cancelled and then postponed for a day, which we thought at the time was too quick. The Dortmund fans made a protest to say that UEFA were money grabbers. And I think there was a bit of insensitivity around right. that whole issue. And I think it should have been delayed a lot longer than it was. It should have been played a week later. Yeah,
it was very poorly handled.
I mean,
Tuchel wasn't happy about that at all, was he?
Ultimately, that was the beginning of the end for Tuchel and his relationship with the Dortmund board. Mm. They didn't see eye to eye over how the whole thing had been handled, both inside the club and how UEFA handled it. And ultimately, their relationship never recovered.
That game was really awful because it changed the course of players' careers. So Mark Bartra had gone to Dortmund and was doing really well.
Yeah.
And now
it really affected him as well.
Yeah, it was really. I mean, I think he.
I mean, understandably.
Was it Bartra who mentioned he looked behind? He was fine until he saw the headrest and saw there was a nail embedded in it.
Yeah.
And at that point, he was like, yeah, that could have been me. And Bartra is a player that really had to rebuild himself after leaving Barca. So it's a tough gig all around.
It's amazing that no one died in that attack. I mean, it was a terrible thing to happen for such a stupid reason.
Well, that's a wild thing. I mean, this is slightly veering into politics for a split second. It's so weird because in German press, it's being discovered as a sort of, is there this bomb plot? And then when it worked out that there's a guy trying to like basically boost the share price, it kind of disappeared from the media. And I'm like,
yeah, there wasn't a lot
that's
of
actually
correction.
Pretty, yeah, it's yeah. pretty wild at that. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Can we jump to the real news in Europe? And that's the Europa League draw.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm obviously kidding.
Really?
But, Celtic, RB Leipzig, Rosenberg, Red Bull, Salzburg.
Oh, the Red Bull derby.
The fizzy fiesta.
Yeah.
yeah. Moving on. We also have.
I think that's genuinely interesting, though, because it's Salzburg knocked Leipzig out of the Europa League last year. And. There's already a bit of bad blood between them.
yeah.
But they're just not that exciting a team, Red Bull Leipzig, this season, are they? RB Leipzig.
Well, I think they've had their heart ripped out from Navicator.
That's why I think it was strange that Nagelsmann decided to go there and announced it. I think that's going to be very odd.
Yeah, it's a bizarre one. But I think it could re-energize them.
Oh, no. It'll give them wings.
Oh, goodness me.
What about the transfer deadline? It was transfer deadline day. The window slammed shut.
In Europe, outside of England. And yeah, we saw a few deals go through. Nothing massive. But I thought Bernat's move to PSG was quite significant.
Yeah.
Tuchel, obviously, bringing in a few Bundesliga players. And Bernat is a really dependable left back. I think he is kind of what PSG actually need, like some pragmatism to go alongside the flair. And he's going to do a really good job, I think, with him on one side, Meunier on the other. I think they got a nice pairing.
It's funny. I think Tuchel will actually welcome that really tough Champions League group because I think otherwise they might go stale.
Yeah.
You know, PSG obviously have big designs on the Champions League. And the group they've got, I mean, the Group C against Napoli, Red Star, Liverpool, is a great place to cut your teeth.
Absolutely. It's like the Bayern thing last year. They didn't really face anyone, you know, that is really going to challenge them until, the semi-finals of the Champions League?
Yeah.
I think until that point, had only lost one game in the Bundesliga. So, yeah, I think PSG needed it. They needed that draw.
Speaking of PSG, Trapp back to Eintracht.
Yeah.
Is that a permanent deal?
Yeah, he needed to reinvent himself because he'd kind of, for quite a while, for well over a year, he'd lost his place at PSG, wasn't able to get it back. I thought did reasonably well when he was in goal for PSG. But yeah, with Buffon arriving, that's certainly going to be the end for him, even if just for a couple of years. And I think Trapp just needed this move. So I think him playing every week is going to be good for him. And if he wants to reassert himself in the German setup, then he has to do
definitely.
That.
Yeah, definitely. Another interesting signing was Kevin Strootman to Marseille.
Mm.
I mean, he's been
two
successive
massive
managers
injuries,
have wanted Kevin Strootman because he brings so much. He's like sort of a Mark Van Bommel's nicer cousin.
He was a football manager instant sign a few years back.
Yeah, Strootman's an extraordinary player, and I'm just really happy that he's landed at a club like Marseille, which is really supportive of big foreign signings and which is just a great stadium. And if you've been to Marseille, anyone listening to this podcast, but it's a terrific new stadium. Well, fairly new stadium. The Velodrome's been redone in the last few years.
With a roof.
Redeveloped, yeah.
And I just feel like it's a really great platform for his talents. They had a good win, didn't they, against Monaco, I think.
So yeah, yes. Last night, right?
They'll hopefully be a strong contender against PSG because at the moment that French league is looking like a bit of a procession.
They also signed... Did they sign Moussa Dembélé?
Leon signed them.
Leon did, sorry.
Leon signed Dembélé, yeah.
Which is good for him because I think, you know, again, the Scottish League, it's a good place to cut your teeth and to start. And I think a stepping stone, but I think with the greatest respect, it's not really a finishing school for a player like that.
And I think Celtic failing to qualify for the Champions League was a big deal, probably the deal breaker for him.
Yeah.
So yeah, he needs to go there. But Leon lost to Patrick Vieira's niece.
Yeah. Big win for P.
They needed that. He needed that. Yeah. I think if he didn't, if he'd lost that game, it could have been.
Might have been it.
Yeah. But also talking of transfers, Nuri Sahin as well. He has been at Dortmund since 2001. On and off. He went to Real Madrid and Liverpool for a while, went back. You know, he started his career at Dortmund as a ball boy. Yeah, started off as a fan, then a ball boy, then got himself into the youth team. And yeah, I mean, he's Dortmund through and through. So I think it would have been tricky for him, difficult decision for him to leave, but I think he had to do it. There's so, you know, a dearth of central midfielders now at Dortmund, and he found himself down the pecking order. So, yeah, he signed with them for a couple of years. So
he just got like board of directors written all over him. He's like, you could just imagine Nuri Sahin on the board of directors.
Absolutely.
Dortmund,
like, or I think he's got himself, he's going to be a Dortmund coach one day.
Yeah.
He'll return. I think as soon as he's done at Bremen, he'll probably retire. Then, yeah, then sit in the dugout alongside
Gundogan number two.
Yes.
Get the band back together.
Yeah.
We got the first round of League of Nations or Nations League. What is it? Is it Nations League?
The League of Extraordinary Nations. It sounds like a cartoon, like a Marvel DC universe, cinematic universe.
Yeah.
They're
not being funny. They keep adding so many bells and whistles. It is like Marvel characters. Like every, sorry for the reference again, but every new year, you've got some new permutation of the tournament's going to be here, the home leg's going to be in Azerbaijan, the away leg's going to be in Monaco. It's like, come on, guys, like, hey, come on.
Is it not just a way to spice up friendlies?
No, it's a money spin.
I think it is. I think it is, actually. I think it is, because friendlies got to the point where they were basically irrelevant for a lot of international footballers. And I mean, I'm not entirely sure how much top level international footballers will care about winning the League of Nations / Nations League. But
well, I think Pogba will enjoy playing with France. I think he'll enjoy getting back to the France camp after this.
France have got an interesting game. I mean, France are playing Germany in Munich, and it's a clash of two nations who are going in opposite directions. France obviously off the back of the World Cup win, Germany in disarray, but Joachim Löw has brought back Sané. He's back in the fold. I mean, he kind of had to. But Sané's not really, he's struggling a bit even at City this year.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the Germany squad, but have a lot of people been cut? Or?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, Sami Khedira was a casualty. There's been a few casualties. A few young guys have come in. Kai Havertz from Leverkusen, exciting young prospect. But yeah, Joachim Löw was under pressure to bring in some new faces, and he has done that, but I think there's going to be pressure for it to be even more.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Rabona podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on all social media platforms, same handle, at Rabona Mag. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you again next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.